Colonel Hollistreel, 3. Did you have any trouble with snakes or other vermin in India?
No, not a great deal. The worst vermin were the tree rats at Karachi. Chiefly, not because they were poisonous, but the soldiers would make friends of them. And frequently, while inspecting my platoon, I would see something move inside a man's shirt and find that he'd got his tree rat tucked inside while on parade. Well, this, of course, wasn't allowed, but they were such friendly little animals, you couldn't do very much about it. Snakes appeared from time to time, but could hardly be called a menace. I've shot a cobra when I was out duck shooting. It suddenly reared itself up, but that was the only one I saw at close range. Some of the water snakes, particularly the yellow and black ring snakes, were poisonous, but like most snakes, they're timid and usually went away from you rather than attacking. I've known crites drop out of the roof of the swimming bath and cause a certain amount of concern, but there's always someone who sees them and they're quickly dispatched.
What about these bathing trips which the soldiers had at Karachi? Were there any dangers there from any animal life, sharks or anything like that?
There was always the main danger of bathing to all of us at Karachi, whether it was at the officers' club at Menora or on the other beautiful beach at Clifton, were the Portuguese men of war. If they came in, which they do, it's like a blue bubble floating on the top with a long trailer behind it. If they drift in and you get one of those round you, you'll be very ill indeed. They were a constant menace, and most of us carried some antitoxic solution in a bottle so that you could quickly put it on you should you run into one of these. Sharks were very rare. There are always the danger of sharks, but they seldom came in close enough to interfere with bathing. Porpoises were frequently there, and if you were out any distance swimming, which some of us often were, it was a bit of a shock if you suddenly bounced into a porpoise because you immediately thought it was a shark. I never heard of anyone being attacked by a shark while I was in Karachi.
Was there such a thing as sea snakes?
Sea snakes, one came across if one was sailing. I did a lot of sailing from Karachi up the mouth of the Indus, and the black and yellow snakes there in the Indus water were undoubtedly poisonous. But one left them alone, and they left you alone. Most water snakes are poisonous.
And you used to hire these, what were they, yachts?
No, there was a good deal of sailing at Karachi, little boats called Tom Tits. The Karachi Yacht Club owned a number of these, which they leased out to civilians or soldiers, and there were constant racing in the evening within the harbour. My friend and I, Jack Odling Smee, who is at this moment Commodore of the Royal Western Yacht Club at Plymouth, had a small locally made boat out there which we did a lot of sailing, particularly exploring the Indus River, which came out just east of Karachi, and we had wonderful sailing up there. We also sailed this boat when we had to dispose of it from Karachi to Bombay in the middle of the monsoon, a journey which took 7 days, for which I wrote up for the Yachting Monthly in England and sent it to them. But they returned the script and said they only printed accurate stories.
What was it which they regarded as inaccurate?
Well, this was an open boat without an engine, And even the BI boats don't ply, steamers don't ply from Karachi to Bombay during the monsoon. But we had to sell this boat because the battalion was leaving in 1935, and the only bid we got for it was from a chap called Vincent, who was one of the leading lights of the Tata company in Bombay, and of course he wanted delivery. So my friend, who was a very fine sailor, suggested to me that we should apply for leave and not say where we were going and sail the boat down to Bombay. It was the most perilous journey, but we got there after a week, the trip being some 750 miles. We couldn't put in anywhere on the way down because it was so rough. And we had considerable difficulty in getting into Bombay Harbour because the entrance is rather small and the swell was so great. We were frightened of being smashed up against the walls. However, we eventually got into the harbour and flung the hook out and went to sleep, only to be arrested by the harbour police, who, when they asked for our papers, which we naturally hadn't got, we told them we'd come from Karachi. They immediately took us in because they considered that was an impossibility.
So your story was never published?
Your story was never published. I've got the record of it.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your shooting expeditions into Sindh?
Yes. Although Karachi is located at the end of the Sindh Desert, there's probably some of the finest shooting, duck shooting, in the world to be had there, if you're prepared to go and get it. This frequently entailed a long journey into those places where there were lakes. A very well-known one was Tundubargo, which was a lake of, I think, some 25 miles by 20 miles across, which had every conceivable kind of duck on it. There were various ways you could get to Tundubargo, but one way we went was to get on the train from Karachi and go to Kotri, which is 200 or 300 miles to the north. We then get off at Kotri and travel by Tonga, which is a small pony carriage, several of these, to a point where we would then get onto camels and do a fairly considerable journey with all our tackle, and finally get onto boats, dugouts, which would take us across to the place where we intended to camp. It's very fascinating, these holidays, which we usually took about Christmas time, because some of the people who lived on the lake were lived on their boats and never came off it. And I've seen a small boy standing by the stalk, which each of these boats had. And as the stalk put its head over the side and got a fish, the small boy would pull it out of the bird's beak and put it in the basket. They were fascinating people and provided the beaters. There was the popular way of shooting out there was to be taken out in a dugout from your camp, stand on a small island, and the natives, directed by one shikari, would then do what they called a honk, which was to drive their boats across the water, putting up duck by the thousand of every variety, who would then fly over the little hide that you've made, a great hide, and be shot at. And the birds we were killed were then sent back to Karachi to the deep freeze refrigeration center by exactly the same way as we'd come up, which was a fairly dicey journey, and the bag was considerably decimated by the time we got to Karachi by the various people who'd handled it. This shooting went on all over the place. There was very good partridge shooting. There was black and grey to be had in Nest Bela and roundabout. But it was always the effort of getting there first. Very hot, you had to go on camels. But if you were enthusiastic enough, as many of us were, then you could have a wonderful time. These lakes in winter, right out in the desert, it was bitterly cold. Frost would be, the ice would be around the edge of the lake, and we'd get up in the morning and fright the geese, and it really was bitterly cold, and we had to keep a fire going inside our tent to keep us warm. But wonderful scenery and a wonderful holiday.
You stayed in two stations mainly in India, I think, in Karachi and in Hyderabad Sindh. How did life in the two stations compare, and which did you prefer?
Hyderabad Sindh is a wretched little place which everybody disliked intensely, and as it came round one's turn to take one's company up to Hyderabad Sindh, one realised it was 6 months of pretty average discomfort. The importance of Hyderabad Sindh, which was the responsibility of the battalion in Karachi, was A, to safeguard the railway bridge over the Indus at Kotre, and also to provide a guard for the divisional ammunition column, which was located at Hyderabad Sindh on its way up to Quetta, where it might be required, or Northwest Frontier. 6 months was quite long enough in Hyderabad Sindh, which incidentally must not be mixed up with the other Hyderabad in central India. This little place was a tiny town. All the houses had wind scoops on them to try and catch whatever breath of air came in off the desert. There was a tiny mess which usually had an artillery officer who was in charge of the divisional ammunition column, a doctor, and a parson. And the two or three officers from the company from the battalion in Karachi. And for 6 months they had to sit in this wretched little mess and amuse themselves the best they could. There was a tiny little club which one could go to in the evening, and occasionally a white film would come up and be put on in the bazaar in the little cinema that they ran there. The cinema owners would ask if we would attend, and if we said we would attend, the film was shown. The only time I went there, there was a film featuring a lady called Pola Negri, and every time she flung herself into one of her tragic scenes, the whole effect was spoilt because there was a lizard on the screen which would either take up a position on her mouth or on her nose or sit on the top of her head. This caused an immense jubilation with the natives who were watching the film. And, of course, we all took it in good part. Otherwise, there was nothing to do in Hyderabad except try to keep your troops on the move and keep them entertained. If you were lucky enough to be there in the winter months, then, of course, one could go from there out to one of these duck-shooting places. And sometimes soldiers would go with the officers to act as helps or something like that. Any excuse to give someone something extra to do was always seized upon.
So you and the other officers were completely devoid of feminine company at Hyderabad Sindh, presumably?
Oh, yes.
What did you do for feminine company in Karachi?
There was unlimited feminine company in Karachi. There were always a lot of young ladies either staying with their families, or daughters, or visitors, friends of friends. There was never a shortage of young ladies to take out to dancing or go on bathing parties, out to local princes, or something like that. Karachi was a gay town, full of the joy of life, always something going on. unlimited entertainment, and it was a bit of a blow to take one's company up to the dreaded Hyderabad Sind, which I think is probably the hottest place in India, and certainly the least interesting.
And did any marriages and so on result from all this kind of social whirl?
Strangely enough, in my own regiment, I never heard of an officer getting married while he was in India to a local person. I think you can come for this generally, that one wasn't supposed to marry until you were 30. You could marry, but you could only do so with permission of your commanding officer. And I think the majority of us did not want to get married, the younger ones, it was. We wanted to enjoy our life and sow our wild oats, which we sowed very vigorously. My great friend who I referred to, Jack Odling Smee, he got married while we were out there, but when he was at home in England, he married a girl he picked up on a cruise and brought her back to Karachi. But I cannot remember anyone marrying out there.
What was life like for the wives of officers and the families in Karachi?
Rather dull, I think. They made the best of it. They couldn't entertain into the vast amount of sport which the officers and soldiers relied on, but of course there were the inevitable tennis parties, dinner parties, bathing parties, sailing. I don't think anyone could say it was a bad life, but it was a bit restricted. And of course the older one played this innumerable bridge parties in the evening when everyone discussed everything that was going on and what everyone else was doing. A typical cantonment life. But Karachi was certainly infinitely better than the majority of Indian stations because it was largely a civilian station and not a military station. Thus there were far more civilian people willing to entertain you, and thus you got a much broader outlook on life, and it wasn't the very restricted cantonment life of a British station up the northwest frontier. I've heard of places like Peshawar and Rawalpindi, Lahore.
What type of jobs were most of the civilians doing with whom you mixed?
The civilians, who were always referred to by the name of Boxwaller, were usually Burma Shell, Anglo-Iranian, in other words, oil people, bankers, doctors, shipping agents, the lot. There was a good deal of industry in Karachi, and it was young people coming out to take up appointments there, which gave Karachi this large element of young civilians who were willing to join in with their young military counterpart. So hence you had a very good setup. And I was captain of the Karachi Gymkhana Rugger side for a couple of years, and we could really field a remarkably good 15, chiefly made up from young chaps who just come from the universities and had played rugby in England, doctors from Guy's and so on. And it was possible to put up a fairly formidable side.
Who did you play? Did you have to go far afield to get fixtures?
We would play the army side, the RAF might send a side down from Quetta. There was usually a tournament. Just before I left, we were going to take our very good Gymkhana side down to Bombay to play. But we left rather suddenly in 1935, and that never came off. No, rival teams were a bit difficult to find. But it was adequate to go have a game. And after all, if you're playing the game for the sport of it, it doesn't really matter.
Did you find that the civilians, the European civilians with whom you mixed in Karachi, had a different attitude towards India and the Indian people to that which to that of the army officers, or was it much the same?
No, I think you're quite right there. I think I noticed their attitude was quite different. They were business people there to do their business and get out of the country what they'd come to get. Our job, the military, was more to get to know the Indians so as we could do our job in conjunction with the Indians. A slightly different aspect.
Did you find that the civilians had more money in general than you army officers?
Oh, yes. A British subaltern in those days was about the lowliest paid thing going. None of us had money. We lived entirely on borrowing.
Didn't that create problems with mixing with these box wallers?
No. You see, it's rather difficult to make it a general approach to the subject. I'm afraid in my regiment, the majority of officers had private means, small private means, which enabled them to keep up with their civilian counterparts. And in fact, shortly after we arrived in Karachi, I regret to say that the civilians in the Sindh Club dubbed the Royal Sussex Regiment with the name of Royal Rich and Rude. But I think that was only because there'd been a little altercation between the rather fierce CO we had those days with a prominent box waller.
So you don't think it was really justified?
No.
What was your entitlement to leave in India?
Generally, one was entitled to so many months a year, which you could take locally or round about. For instance, some people would take a trip to Japan, or others would go up into the hills to Kashmir, which is the most lovely country in the world, and others would go shooting up in the Himalayas, or you could do as I did, accumulate your leave and take it at home, 6 months in 3 years, and that's what I did. So I came home in, having gone out there in 1930, I came home in 1933. That was my one and only leave in the UK during my tour in India.
So didn't you see any other parts of India apart from Sindh?
Oh, yes, because one went on courses which were dotted about. Signal school was at Pune, which is east of Bombay. Wonderful place, a beautiful race course, and renowned for the beauty of the young ladies who live there. The machine gun school was at Ahmednagar, and another place one went to on courses was Pachmari, which is a lovely country, centre of India. One was frequently sent away on jobs. I was up in Quetta, where the military staff college is. We took boxing team up there and was there 3 months when the regiment won the All India Boxing Competition, and I had my nose broken. One was constantly being sent somewhere or other, but it was invariably that part of India, never south and never east.
Which part of India did you prefer that you saw? Is it possible to say?
India, wherever you go, changes. I think the parts I liked most of all was when sailing with my friend up the estuaries of the Indus. Fascinating landscape. The locals had hardly seen white people. And in fact, one evening, just after we'd tied up, we saw a local native going along in his dugout. He got some prawns and fish in it. And we managed to get him to come alongside. He didn't understand Urdu, but we managed to persuade him to come alongside and that we wanted to buy some of his lovely-looking prawns and other fish. And we gave him 2 rupees, with which he got out of the boat and left it and pushed off.
And
we came owners of this dugout and the fish. So we took what fish we wanted and sent the boat drifting down towards the village, where we hope it was picked up. That was lovely. Generally, the northwest frontier of India, down through the Sindh Desert, is pretty dull. And the northwest frontier is rocky. Well, you'll know only too well what it's like. Quetta is a little oasis, tucked away, but you can't get out of it. And down through the Sindh Desert, there's nothing there at all. And Karachi is just a little Brighton, tucked at the end of the Sindh Desert. The most beautiful country I think I saw was at Pachmari, which is quite lovely.